Welcome to Great Australian Lives.
For Tobin Brothers Funerals,
celebrating lives. Here's your host, Laura Turner.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Our guest today has been described over the years as polarizing, strategic, ruthless, and instinctual, with a natural ability to read public opinion. From his early days as a cadet journalist, he worked his way up the ladder of some of Australia's most loved newspapers, which included editing the Herald Sun here in Melbourne for 10 years. He's the first to admit that his style hasn't always endeared him to his colleagues and competitors, but that's never stopped him. It is my pleasure to welcome to Great Australian Lives the National Executive Editor for News Corp Australia, Peter Blunden. Welcome, Peter.
Oh, thanks, Laura.
How are you, Peter?
Yeah, well, thanks, Laura.
That's
and,
good.
And it's good to be on your program, Laura.
It's an honour to have you. For the last few weeks, the Herald Sun has been celebrating 30 years in the industry, I guess, which has faced some real challenges over the last decade or so. I'm sure you would find it thrilling to reach this milestone.
Yeah, absolutely, Laura. It's been quite a journey. I don't know where the time's gone, but an awful lot's happened. And interesting when you reflect on it, the incredible way that the world has changed, the city's changed, our industry has changed. And, you know, I guess it's always been the same, but the more you look at what's happened, you know, this has been a fantastic city for journalism and for telling stories and a great community and a wonderful place to live. And I think we should celebrate that at a difficult time like this. That the good news outweighs the bad news, I think, in living in Melbourne.
It's interesting you say that because a lot of public criticism, and it's of me as well as a news reporter, that we often only focus on the negative stuff, but there is so much positive stuff out there, isn't there?
Yeah, we like to celebrate things. Look, most of the year, I mean, we're focusing on things that are pretty upbeat. The lifeblood of our industry in many ways is reporting on the life here. We get excited about things like the Australian Open tennis, and we go into the footy season, and we celebrate during the spring carnival. A lot of it's sport. We've got a great arts community. We have an amazing restaurant scene, and the lifestyle in Melbourne is quite fantastic. And look, there are scandals. I mean, it's unbelievable to think of the number of stories. We've never been without, you know, stories to keep readers interested over the years, and that's gone from whether it's scandals involving gangland wars and we've had a lot of tragedies. The news agenda has been very hectic, but every day is different. That's the most important thing about our business. I mean, no two days are the same, and some days it's a negative story, some days it's positive, but we don't go actively looking to be negative to people because we know that's what they're thinking. We like to give them a bit of a lift wherever we can.
You've been quoted in the past as saying that you're a firm believer in the power and influence of a newspaper to help make a city a better place. And I guess that flows on from what we were just saying. Media outlets and newspapers especially do really have that power, don't they?
Well, if you can use it for good, you know, it's a great thing. I'm really proud of things like the Good Friday Appeal, which our company actually started. It'll be 90 years next year. And every year it really is an uplifting thing to see the spirit and generosity of the people of Victoria getting behind our Royal Children's Hospital. So that's one of many things. And, you know, the philanthropic sector in this city is amazing. I've been fortunate enough to be involved with a lot of causes. I'm involved with the Children's Hospital, but also things like the Alana and Madeline Foundation, which protects children from violence, which was set up after the tragedy of Port Arthur in 1996. And you realise how many passionate people there are out there who want to make this community better. They want to make it safer. And Melbourne, I have found, and I haven't been here all my life, but I've been here for more than 25 years, I have found the community in Victoria really cares about making this a better place. This is seen in so many ways during the course of the year, but nothing more than the Good Friday Appeal.
At the current situation we're in with this pandemic, I guess you'd agree it is more important than ever for us to shine a light on the good stuff, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, people's lives changed overnight when this happened, and that was something we had to adjust our content as quickly as we possibly could. You couldn't. It was a different news agenda, and people were searching for information. They suddenly had to, you know, change their entire lifestyles overnight. They were either, you know, locked away at home, or, you know, they had the kids at home. So issues like homeschooling, you know, there are literally, you know, you know, their money affairs, people losing their jobs. It's been a tragic situation, and you can't sugarcoat the tragedy of what's happened globally with the coronavirus. But at the same time, you know, you've got to try to help people get through their lives, and because you're living it yourself, you know, you start thinking how can we help them? What can we do? And we just found things as simple as helping with homeschooling, awful lot of recipes and food stories. And we asked the readers what they want, how we could help them. We introduced new puzzles. We doubled the size of puzzles and quizzes to keep people busy. These were just sort of instinctive responses to what happened. So you know, we'd like to think we played some small role. And to be honest, our audience has grown over that period. It's been quite phenomenal.
Well, I know with television ratings, they've been really strong as well. And I guess that's because everybody's at home.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I think they're just... you know, can't be the days until that changes. But I think they're probably, you know, it's brought a lot of families probably closer together, and it's probably put some stresses on others. I mean, some of the statistics that are coming out, certainly, you know, you've got a feel for, you know, there are issues like mental health that really need to be looked at. This has put an enormous amount of strain on so many people. And I just, you just day after day, you see, you know, people in small business that have been so tragically affected by this, that there's going to be a big rebuilding program. And that's also something that the paper is trying very hard to do, to play a constructive role in, you know, rejuvenating the economy and the society in any way we can. We're running at the moment a big series on roundtables on jobs. I think there are the economic issues going to be with us for an awful long time. We've bought ourselves into a lot of debt, and even though interest rates are low, we're going to be living in that for a long time. So we want to do our best to help people through this.
The paper's also been, or the Herald Sun's also been running some nostalgic features around the 30th anniversary, the biggest scandals. What are some of the biggest scandals you can remember in your time as an editor?
There are so many, to be honest, Laura. One of the ones I've got...
in Melbourne, that's for sure.
The one that I recall when I was editing the paper that actually, you know, that was actually putting on massive amounts of circulation. We got accused of over-covering it, but the Wayne Carey story... with North Melbone, the affair he had with the captain's wife. If you want to get things going in Melbourne to sell papers, there's something about mixing football and sex, dare I say it. But that was a formula. We saw it. We were just selling out of newspapers all over Melbourne when that story was happening for a full week. There have been you know, many others, of course, but look, the gangland wars was a big story, and that continues right up to today. And I think the paper's rolling. Obviously, the Lawyer X story was really you know, what you call a scandal, which has far-reaching effects over the community. The justice system and the criminal justice system has had a lot of questions to answer over that. You know, and we've had we've had so many massive stories. And I mentioned Port Arthur, but of course, you know, there was no bigger story in that period than you know, apart from the current story, obviously, with coronavirus, but September 11 was a story that changed the world as well. And that was probably the, you know, the story that stopped us in our tracks more than anything, because you didn't see it coming. It happened late at night. It happened close to 11 o'clock at night. And I think mobilising your team to, after you've already printed, you know, half of your newspapers, to actually get out there and provide that news for people. That's about as challenging as it gets, but it's also, you run on adrenaline to when you're covering stories like that. And I think we went right through till, you know, 7 or 8 o'clock the following morning. So it sort of became a, I don't think I've ever been awake for 36 hours before, but I was that night. It's always a team effort. And, you know, if you haven't got good people around you, you can't do the job.
That's right. And this is not a criticism of the public, but in terms of the effort and the logistics it takes to get a paper printed, for a massive, massive story to happen like that at that time of night, as you touched on there, what goes on behind the scenes to get the public that information is enormous, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, having been in the newsroom and some of those big stories happening, I can assure you nobody sits there and, you know, there's anything that they're living that story as well. I mean, you know, we watched the second tower go down, you know, live that night, and there's just a gasp. And we only probably had, you know, 8 or 10 people in the office as that story was unfolding. You thought, is this for real? It was just like a horror movie. And similarly, another big story that happened early on was the death of Princess Diana, and that was one that, you know, it really gripped the community. I mean, the outpouring of grief globally was huge, but that was a story that everybody wanted to know more about at the time. It really was such a sad story, and that was one that happened. We sort of woke up to it on a Sunday morning, so it was a Sunday as the story developed, and I just have a strong recollection of the stories that you see them in the sales, you see them in the audiences, but you also see we ran dozens and dozens of pages of death notices that people in Melbourne actually placed for Princess Diana. That's what it was like, and we've never had that before. So there have been a lot of standout stories in those years, Laura.
Yeah, and to be in the newsroom when that happens, it's stuff like Princess Diana and September 11, there aren't really many bigger stories, are there?
Well, there weren't at the time, and you know, I mean, you couldn't have made up the script for this year. I mean, the tragic fires, I mean, we thought this is a big, big story this year, and it was a big story, and it affected so many people, and it's just been a horror year from day one. I mean, what has happened has been unimaginable this year, and, you know, I think all we can hope for is we get a vaccine through it. But the livelihoods, the impact this has had on the world, you know, we're looking very closely at the impact it's had, obviously, on sectors like travel, let alone, you know, hospitality. You know, people have lost their livelihoods out of this around the planet, and obviously, you know, more importantly, people have lost their lives in large numbers. And so I certainly haven't seen a more significant story than this one. And it's just gone on and on all year. And who knows what the final chapter this will be. I think we've never, the planet has never worked so hard to find a solution to the same problem. You know, we've been through some horrific wars, and there've been some huge stories. This has been the only one that I can think of that the entire planet is affected at the same time. And we're all working as hard as we can to report it.
In terms of these big stories, as you mentioned, I guess in comparison to something like Princess Diana or September 11 and now with the pandemic, the influence of social media and the way a newspaper ends up reporting that final copy would be obviously drastically different now, wouldn't it?
Look, obviously our landscape, the media landscape, has changed dramatically in the last few years, and you know, a lot of that makes me pretty sad, actually. I think I really should resist the temptation to look at social media sometimes. I don't participate in it apart from it to a very, very small extent. I like to sort of get plugged in and see what's being said. And the anonymity and the vitriol that exists across some of those platforms is really disappointing. I think there's a lack of responsibility, but it is what it is, and we've had to adapt to the fact that you know, the digital media landscape has grown quite dramatically, but thankfully we're in that space as well, and you know, we adapted. So not only are we producing newspapers around the country, but of course it's still all about the content and the journalism in the end. We're selling that, and if people want to consume it on digital platforms, we're there to give it to them. We nationally now we have close to 700,000 paid digital subscribers of our newspapers in this country, which I think is world class, and it shows that people have a real appetite for news and information, and you know, and we need that to grow, because obviously, you know, newspapers are quite expensive to produce as well. We've had a very successful newspaper in those 30 years. We're really proud of. You know, in the end, we know that, you know, there's a lot of competition for audiences. But we're confident that our newspaper will be here for the long term, and we've had to adapt in many ways, but we believe in them, and thankfully we've got a proprietor who believes in them as well.
Absolutely. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. In these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au, and more with Peter Blunden in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is Peter Blunden, National Executive Editor with News Corp Australia and former editor of the Herald Sun, which has just celebrated its 30th year of publication. Now, Peter, we were talking earlier about all of the massive stories that have been in the papers over the years and in your career, but I want to go back to the start, the very start, not of your career, but of your life. You're actually born in Sydney, weren't you, in 58?
Yeah, I was, Laura, yes. I've tended to move around a bit in my career. I've done seven now, but Melbourne's home. I mean, I made the move to Melbourne 25 years ago, but I was in Sydney, but I bounced over to Adelaide and back to Sydney, down to Canberra, back to Sydney, and was in Adelaide a couple of times. But here, this is home, and but I did. I didn't leave Sydney until I was early 20s, and the career took me around from early in life. And it's even though I've been with the same company for a long, long time, I feel as though I've done, you know, a dozen different jobs in that time. But Sydney was home.
Did you have a sort of idyllic childhood with brothers and sisters? I know Dad was a policeman.
Yeah, no, my dad was a policeman. Mum was a nurse, and she was a nurse for more than 40 years. So I sort of, we lived a pretty humble life in southwestern Sydney, and I had a sister. We lived a pretty humble life. But my father was the youngest of seven, mum was youngest of three, so I had a lot of older cousins. So I sort of had the influence of a lot of cousins around the place for an awful long time. And all of my dad's family were from Balmain. And, my uncle had a pub, my auntie had the cake shop, another uncle was a butcher. So it was a little village in Sydney there that our family was, pretty much spent all our time there.
Sounds like you would have been well fed.
Probably well fed and probably well teased as well by older cousins. And, I had cousins who played sport, and they were sort of the sort of local heroes and things like that. But as opposed to my mum's family, were all very much country people. My grandfather was a railway station master and took mum all around the country towns of New South Wales. And she actually grew up in Newcastle. And ended up coming to Sydney as a nurse in the early 50s. So it was, yeah, and it was interesting. It was a great time, but I found, life changed pretty dramatically once you get into the workforce, and it often dictates where you spend your life. And it certainly wasn't.
I was going to ask if your dad's career as a policeman influenced you at all, whether you ever considered that path. But it sounds like your cousins had a very big influence on you.
Yeah, they did. I was never inclined to do that. It's funny. We always used to have the papers delivered at home, and I think I sort of grew up reading newspapers. I was always interested in the news, but I can't say that I really had a specific interest in being a journalist until probably the end of my school years. It's funny. I had a cousin as well who lived in Newcastle, and Grandfather used to joke quite often after we both got in, he joined the Navy. And when we were young, my grandfather often joked and said, "Oh, here comes the Admiral and the editor." And thankfully, he lived long enough to see that happen in both cases. He lived just long enough for me to become an editor. In fact, we lost him the same year I became editor of the Herald Sun, about a month after, and my cousin ended up being a Rear Admiral in the Navy. So I look at that, and I think that's probably about as proud as I could be of our respective careers.
Absolutely. And just on that, you joining your cadetship with News Limited, that was 1976 at the Sunday Telegraph. Yeah. Things have changed a lot since then.
Yeah, it was. I was fortunate, actually. I got into university, and just as I was about to embark on, various different career options. I'd applied for a few jobs and ended up starting at the bottom, and it's the only place to start, I think, sometimes. And I had a choice did I want to do a cadetship with the company, or did I want to do a university degree? And I already had my foot in the door, so I thought, I'll give it a go and see where this ends up. And after a period, I was lucky enough to get a cadetship. And so I spent 3 years doing cadetship, and learning on the job, I found was as good as as good as I could expect, and it sort of equipped me. Being in those old school in the 70s, I had a newsroom and a very different environment to what you got now. And, you know, people were smoking and the loud typewriters and the copy paper and carbon paper being thrown everywhere and people yelling and screaming and chasing deadlines. And the printing presses were actually downstairs and you could hear them roll at the time. And, you know, the paper would be put in the chutes down to the linotype metal operators, and I used to watch that and I was fascinated. And, you know, once it gets into your blood, that was it. So I've never really had a moment where I was going to do anything different if it was my choice. And and I think it was the people, the environment was pretty rough and tumble. It was there were some real characters around the place, and they probably did a lot of things you wouldn't get away with now. The culture has changed enormously from those days, but that's how it all started. And you know, it was with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And when you say the culture has changed, I mean, my career is not as long as yours, but I remember starting and there was no internet in our newsroom. And I'm sure you would remember those days as well, or having to go to a phone box to call the newsroom rather than just get on your phone
that.
And having 15 different ways to communicate.
No doubt about that, Laura. Yeah, no, that was it couldn't be more different. And the idea... I mean, I think we were lucky if we had. In fact, when I started, we weren't using computers in the office. It literally was typewriters, and you'd type several copies of the story, and you'd be putting it down these chutes, and it'd be going down to someone sitting on these massive, big, clunky old machines, and turning them into metal. And it was fascinating to see it. And then, you know, so we've always experienced change. I mean, people think change is just a recent phenomenon. It's always been the case, and things have become, you know, more efficient and tighter, and a lot of, you know, technology has cost, you know, has created a lot of jobs and made a lot of people a lot of money, and it's also cost. There are a lot of professions that existed in those days, you know, during my career that don't exist anymore, except on the smallest of provincial newspapers perhaps, but not even in Australia.
So how did you end up, I know you were at The Australian for 10 years, how did that evolve? How long were you at The Sunday Telegraph, and how did you step up?
I went onto The Australian in the late 70s, and I think I just had one of those quirks of fate, and the way that things work is you just don't know what each day holds in journalism. And I remember a Friday afternoon, so it's 40 years actually this month, 40 years, yeah, October 1980, I was the chief of the reporting staff came over and said, would you be interested in working interstate at some stage? And I said, oh, I haven't really thought about it that much, which I should have, considering I was working on The Australian. And he came back to me an hour later and said, how would you like to go to Adelaide or Perth? And I said, oh, okay. Or maybe I'd consider Adelaide perhaps. I like Perth. I'd just been there and visited there the year before. It was actually the first time I think I'd been that far from home. And I went, he said, okay, you start Monday. So I got in the car over the weekend. I said to my mum, I'm going out to Adelaide, and didn't know what that held, and that changed the life. I never did actually. That was the last I ever lived at home. So that was it. You know, I always wanted to get back to Sydney, and got back to Sydney. And the first day I got back there, the 39 journalists lost their jobs. And I think I was one of the last ones standing, probably because I was cheap. And I survived, and I watched all my colleagues. I literally sat at a block of four desks, and I was the only one left at the end of the day. So you know, times have never really changed. And the funny thing, I remember missing an interview I was supposed to do on that day, and it was actually with Don McLean, the singer who sang American Pie, and I'll never forget. It was my first day back in Sydney, and I missed the press conference because all these people were being sacked, and I didn't know if I was being sacked. And so I rang the, and I, because I missed the press conference, I said, rang the PR guy for Don McLean. Look, I'm really sorry, but I've missed the press conference. I had a couple of incidents at work, but is there any way I can actually have a few words? He said, yeah, come around, have lunch with him. So I ended up having lunch with Don McLean talking about American Pie on a day when 39 people were there. And I thought to myself, gee, this is a pretty interesting profession. And and it's never really got – it's sort of symptomatic of what – you know, it sounds like I dine out and stories like that. I don't. It's just that I think back to those years of when you were starting and why you stay with something. And, you know, it's pretty hard when you get opportunities like that. And I was a pretty young person then. It's never been boring.
No, that's right. My career started out as a TV news reporter, and I still am one. And I have similar sort of stories. You get addicted to the thrill and the opportunities that open up that I don't think happen in other professions, that's for sure. Just the people you come across and the access you get to things, it just doesn't happen in other careers. So I understand that addiction.
There's plenty of tough days. And I must admit, I never really enjoyed doing that. You know, some of those really tough stories. I really admire a lot of reporters who get in there and have to deal with, you know, the grim stories that happen every day in our industry.
Absolutely, yeah. There's a lot of days that aren't enjoyable. Now, you ended up the editor of the Advertiser, so you went from being a cadet and a reporter to editor. To step into a different role, did you see your old role differently, or did you feel privileged to have done both?
It's interesting. Sometimes you look at people doing big jobs and you think, geez, I don't think I could ever do that. It's not until you're thrust into it that you find out if you can do a job or not. And some, you know, sometimes, you know, I certainly haven't been perfect at the jobs that I've done, but I've certainly given it my best shot. And I think that one of the life-changing things, I got asked once to be, you know, chief of staff on The Australian, so you're in charge of all the reporters. And, boy, I reckon that's one of the really tough jobs because, you know, you live and breathe having to present all the stories each day to the editor. And, you know, you go from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed, you are completely and utterly engrossed in the day's news agenda. And that's tough. And I did that for about 4 years. And that equipped me for other things. But no, the sort of changing thing was I got asked to launch The Australian. The Australian has a colour magazine in the weekends, in the weekend newspaper. And I got asked to be the first editor of that back in 88. So I don't know where 32 years are gone with that. But so I sort of founded that, did it for the first 100 issues. And then for the second time in my life, on one day's notice, got asked to go to Adelaide again. So I ended up going back the first time as a reporter and the second time as the editor of the Adelaide Advertiser. So so that was an interesting mission.
Back to where it all began.
Well, it was more interesting than I thought because we were actually the first newspaper to go into colour. So News Corp had just spent $1 billion investing in colour presses in Australia in 1990. And the Advertiser was first. I didn't know that until I arrived in the office. I thought, oh, we're first, are we? Okay, so we've got to bring colour in. And again, it's the quality of people around you and you're working as a team. And there was a lot of pressure on that. It's not one of those things you want to stuff up. You don't want to really stuff up a billion-dollar investment by your boss in colour presses. So that was a life-changing experience for sure.
Absolutely. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And in these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. And more with Peter Blunden when we return. Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is Peter Blunden, National Executive Editor for News Corp Australia and former editor of the Herald Sun, which has just celebrated its 30th year of publication. Now, Peter, we've already talked about your rise to the different roles and climbing the ladder through journalism and ending up as an editor. I want to go backwards a little bit. Your those early years as a cadet, and I remember my early years, you know, as a young reporter. There are some really, really big, influential characters who can be quite intimidating as a young reporter. And I can imagine in a newspaper it would be the same. Did you have those experiences where there were those big characters in the smoky newsroom back in the 70s?
Oh, no doubt. The cultures were totally different. I think in those days in both Sydney and Melbourne, you know, you had morning newspapers and afternoon newspapers. And what it often meant was the shifts used to intersect. So you used to find, I think, you know, I'm sure, you know, it was the case with the Herald here, but it certainly was with the Daily Mirror in Sydney, the afternoon paper. The people would just be arriving as the people from the morning newspaper were coming, finishing up at the pub. You know, there was definitely a bit of a go to the pub after work culture, which doesn't exist these days, I can assure you. But it was that rough and tumble, culture, and you know, very, very competitive environments. And to the minute in newspapers, you didn't have the internet, and you didn't have other sources, and the news really was consumed very largely by what the papers got first, and you had very intense competition. You know, dare I say, huge stresses, but certainly big characters, and you know, most of them smoked and swore and went to the pub. It was, you know, in many ways, some of it was pretty gross, but they only really behaved that way after they'd done a really, really hard day's work, and they'd be boasting about breaking the story ahead of their competitor and really hard at the ball. And a lot of those people, you know, they were, well, some of them didn't have very long lives, to be perfectly honest with you. The pace of that environment was very intense, but it's a very different world now.
It is enormously different, isn't it, in terms of everything, the way people are treated in the newsrooms and, as you said, the not smoking. There's still a bit of drinking that goes on, but, the HR side of things has really stepped up.
Well, legends were made in those days and people love it. Look, the occasional reunion, people love to share stories about those tough old days, but you know, it's an enormously different environment now, and we still have some fantastic journalists operating in the industry now. It's just a very different, you know, landscape for their content to be consumed.
Can you remember as a young cadet, a time when you might have missed? I know we talked a little bit about that before, but a time where you might have missed, you got beaten or got scooped, or where your sort of heart sank when you saw the competitor's copy the next morning.
Oh yeah, I think if you didn't have that, you're probably in the wrong game. I think having a competitive streak in a business like ours is enormously important. It drives you to improve your performance, and I think. Cities that have very competitive media environments, and we certainly have had that in Melbourne. You know, there's a fair bit of media here, and competing for the story is what drives a lot of people, and it's enormously satisfying to get a story first, and it's very disappointing if you get beaten. I always had a bit of a policy: if you do get beaten on a story, the best thing to do is not sulk about it, is to go back and get it and do twice as good a job on that story and make it look like it was yours in the first place. I've seen that happen. I've seen people think, "Wow, I've got that story," and then you come along and get a better angle the next day. But I think unless you're taught that early in your career, it sometimes doesn't come naturally for people. So there are people influence you to do that.
You touched a little earlier on the new colour magazine that you were entrusted with for The Australian. I'm sure that it would be quite daunting going from being on the daily news beat, doing breaking news, to wrapping your head around doing that weekend reading in a colour magazine. That would have been a real challenge.
Yeah, in many ways I found it harder because, you know, even though you only came out once a week, the bar was lifted really high, and there was an expectation that because you had all week to do it and you worked to, you know, very difficult deadlines, you were having to produce the magazine, you know, 2 to 3 weeks in advance, and it would print literally because you had to distribute it in the paper around the country. It would print 1 week before it appeared in the newspaper. So you had to bear that in mind. And the bar was set high, so you had to come up with ideas that you thought were really going to resonate. I was fortunate enough to edit it for the first 100 editions, and I look back and I think, you know, we did some pretty good stuff. I think we did the first ever cover story with Nicole Kidman, and ironically we called it A Star Is Born, and we did a story with her. She was very young then, and we also did the last story with Sir Sidney Nolan and took him into the outback, and did this last piece with our one of the most famous ever artists. And so there was a real variety of content. You know, we had some investigations, we had a bit of fun, it was a bit cheeky, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But 100 editions was enough. I think I'd done my job by then.
I'll bet. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. In these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. More with Peter Blunden in just a sec.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives. Our guest tonight is Peter Blunden, National Executive Editor with News Corp Australia and former editor of the Herald Sun, which has just celebrated its 30th year of publication. Peter, we've talked all about your career and rise through the ranks. You said, where did all those years go? For those listening who might have a loved one or might be someone who sees a future for themselves in journalism, do you have any advice?
Oh, absolutely. I think there'll always be a room for journalism, however people consume it. You know, look, I think it's hard work, it's competitive, but, you know, I think that the news day ends sometimes where some of the best stories aren't actually reported. They're all out there. There's a lot of stories in a big city in any given day, and I think people who big ideas, you know, you've got to be proactive sometimes with that, but also... You have to have a great work ethic. You have to be very resilient. But I think, look, I'm optimistic. Whatever platform there's always going to be a need for journalists. I really don't like the thought of, you know, robots doing the story for us. Literally, there are people who are trying to find ways to get stories written that way. You know, I've never seen a robot go and, chase a story down. I think you've got to use a bit of shoe leather. You've got to use a bit of energy to get the best stories. There's no room for reporters who aren't prepared to work hard, ask a lot of questions, be probing, don't never assume things. I think bringing young people through the ranks is enormously important too. And I think the key to it is I always encourage young people to make sure they write for the readers, not their mates or their sources. You know, understand that you're there to serve an audience, and you've got to provide a service for that audience, and you know, not for yourself or not even for your boss. You have to prepare content that the audience wants to see. We're measuring performance more than ever before, but I do think it's still a fantastic business for people to be in. You quickly learn whether or not it's suitable for you, but I would never discourage a young person if they've got an interest in the news. And, you know, some people like to specialise in things. I think it's best to get training in a broad base of journalism to learn the ropes. We like to bring people in so they've got some experience, you know, at the courts or in police rounds or working late at night and working through the night. In the end, it's about the content. You quickly work out if it's for you. In the end, it's about people and how you deal with people and work up your contacts. And it's a long race. It's a long race, but it's worth having. And I'd encourage young people to have a go.
Are you troubled, Peter, by this sort of culture at the moment of there being no faith in the media and in news outlets, this fake news attitude, and there doesn't seem to be as much respect anymore for the industry?
No. Well, look, the industry's not without fault, but I think a lot of that's, you know, nonsense. The content that worries me most is some of the rubbish that you do see on the digital platforms. I mean, if you spend your time thinking you can find out what's going on from engaging with Twitter, then you're not really finding out what's happening in the world, would be my view. I think this whole notion of, you know, people inventing stories, I can guarantee you if anybody in our business was ever found to have invented a story, made something up, they'd be out the door in 2 seconds. And unfortunately, there'd be people hearing that thinking, well, that's not true. Well, I'll guarantee you it is. And I have never in a newsroom in my life been around anyone who has suggested anything other than reporting, you know, a story accurately. And this notion of fake news is, you know, look, it's politics. I mean, I think we're learning a lot about the way politicians operate at the moment. I guarantee if we, you know, some of the behaviour of some of the people in public office at the moment, you know, this collective loss of memory. I mean, all the sort of nonsense going on. I think people should be asking more questions about that than asking stories. I think a lot of journalists have probably been a bit kind to people, to be honest. I think you can't probe enough and ask questions enough in this environment. Politics is a tough business, but so is journalism, and we try to set the bar up pretty high, far from faultless. And I think there are some notable failings of journalism. But I mean, to suggest this whole fake news thing is just a gimmick, and I think it's complete nonsense.
That's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show tonight, Peter Blunden. Thank you.
Pleasure, Laura. Good speaking. Enjoyed it.
And if you've enjoyed our chat with Peter Blunden tonight and you'd like to share it with a friend, subscribe to the Great Australian Lives podcast. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And join me the same time next week when we celebrate another Great Australian Life.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.